Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, sponsored by CRadioDifferently.com. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Robin Hicks.
This week,
we catch up with Howzo star and Aria's host Jabba.
Come on, mate!
Oh, fuck on! I've never been so jolly, hey!
Who's who in 2012?
South Australia flounders after Goldfish Gate.
Will Australia follow Europe into recession?
BM's Bright Young Things or Youth Fail?
Google's most searched for ads.
We're only young and naive still. We require certain skills.
And now for the bullshit.
Now, in a desperate attempt to fill 24 hours of programming, here's some bullshit that happened somewhere today. We've got some footage here of the bullshit, which began just after 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Joining Robin and I today in the studios of CBS Interactive is Hugh Martin, CEO of Crown Content.
Morning all.
Friend of the podcast, Jason Jabba Davis.
And hello.
And podcast producer, Colin Delaney.
Hello.
Now, Jabba, let's start with you. Since we've since you last joined us in the podcast, you've been back on live telly, hosting live streaming of the Arias, behind the scenes stuff. Let's start with that. How was it?
It was amazing, actually. I've chucked a whole bunch of stuff onto YouTube because the idea was that Optus sponsored a stream called Access All Arias, where I was roaming around with a camera for about 5 hours. The only thing we weren't allowed to film was Julia Gillard, but we had a good chat with Tim Matheson, talked to him about men's sheds. We spoke to basically everyone from David Wenham, Delta, Kylie, got inside Kylie's dressing room and stole her lamp, which I keep fessing up to and no one seems to care.
You should put it on eBay.
That's a good idea. That's a great idea. I've just put a bunch of old phones on eBay from one of my previous contracts, but that's a whole other story. But look, it was really good. I'm not sure about the numbers that Optus got. It was something that they promoted via SMS and via internally via the Go broadcast. So I would have liked to have more numbers and probably would have liked to incorporate it into the show more. And I think it was a bit of a template for the Arias next year to have more backstage stuff.
Well, I suppose the challenge for the Arias anyway was just not to be seen as a disaster after last year. And they pretty much passed that one, I think.
Yeah, look, Clive Burchan from the Conscience Organisation, he was kind of the man at the helm there. Vicky Gerard, a woman who looked after the Vicky was one of the EPs of the show. Look, a great team, and that really was. They were tasked with rescuing the Arias from the last 2 years, which were, you know, more and more disastrous. And I think they really achieved that.
You've done it in the past. How did it compare to the ones you've been involved with in the past?
Pretty similar, to be honest. It's quite formulaic in that if you make it about a sit-down dinner for the industry folk, give them a good feed, give them lots of wine, make a big deal out of the awards, which is basically what people are there for, I thought it was great. I thought the live performances were good. So, you know, I thought it was, you know, back on track.
How do you find the experience of live streaming? Frankly, that makes me a little bit nervous. How do you find it?
I enjoyed it while I was doing it. It took me probably 3 days to recover just from the adrenaline going for being on. And looking back at it, I was a little disappointed in my approach to it in that there was so much time spent just myself going, and look, here we go, here's a whiteboard over here, and you can just effectively bullshitting so that when I got someone, and for instance, I'd be interviewing Hugh or Tim or, you know, one of the Aria stars, it was hard to get out of that mindset of being a smart ass. So as a result, David Wenham, had a great chat with him, but I said, when are we going to see you on our screen next? And he said, well, I'm heading to New Zealand to work with Jane Campion on a TV series. And I said, what, no film work? And it missed the mark. And I felt like I'd really wounded him there. So I don't know if David Wenham checks out the Mumbrella podcast, but if anyone knows him, please pass on my sincere apologies, because that guy is a legend. And the last thing I wanted to do was offend him. And he was just, you know, stirring things up with the Wiggles, really.
Now, Jabba, you're a staple on Paul Fenech's sort of cast. You've been on quite a few shows. How does, the most recent being Howzo's, how does a Paul Fenech set differ because from a normal TV set? It's very guerrilla style in its production, it feels like to me. Is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely, Colin. It's a situation where Paul likes to say all the money is spent on the screen. So he spends a lot of time editing. He spends a lot of time doing stunts and setups and shooting things from different angles just to give it, I suppose, a bit of a cartoony look. You know, it is what it is, and I'm really proud of Howzo's. I just saw today in the Sydney Morning Herald Green Guide Disappointments of 2011. We were in there next to Kyle and Jackie O's Night with the Stars. I thought, well, then... Hello, Oz Stereo. Hello. Can you join the dots there? You need someone for breakfast.
Now, Howzo seems to have split its viewership between elitist and populist. Should you apologise for being populist?
The only thing with Howzo's that I'm disappointed in is probably the level of swearing, which I feel has turned a lot of people off the show. I think the content of it is pretty true to what is out there in the suburbs, and I think that was always going to be the problem for us is the tastemakers live within 5 km of the CBD and don't actually witness, I don't witness what happens really in the suburbs. We see it on the nightly news at 6 o'clock. So the reality of the situation, as Paul maintained, is that Howzo's is a Disney version of what's really going on out there. And I think people, you know, to me that is the truth. So a lot of people just don't believe it.
And Paul, I think he argued that 10 o'clock was a bit late for the slot that they were given as well.
A bit less swearing. He might have got it at 9:30, which I would have liked to see. So I don't know if there's going to be a season two. I'm not sure what his next move is. I think it's the best thing that he's made, and it's certainly been one of the most divisive.
Yeah, and the character itself, you were sort of one of the central characters, Dazza. How did you feel performing it?
I loved it, really loved it. The girl, Eldor, who I played up against, Shazza, who's my on-screen de facto, she's brilliant. She works at a children's hospital. She's a great talent. And just the enjoyment of getting in, dressing up and, you know, acting not an idiot, but, you know, just as a bogan, like so much of that is just true to my heart. I would turn up to set in one flannelette shirt and just put on another. And that was changing into costume. So I loved it, and it's since turned out that my rubbish man, his name is Dazza, and he kind of can't believe. He's like, mate, you're joking.
I nearly tweeted, and I chickened out of doing so. Is it wrong to feel attracted to the women of Howzo's?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because on screen I don't find many of them attractive. In the person, they're all enormously, you know, charming individuals. So I guess it's what you have a fetish for, Tim.
There we go. There's probably too much information there. Now, you're also writing for our sister title, Encore Magazine, our radio columnist. The edition just out talking about the perils and, I guess, ups and downs of breakfast radio. Mm. Why is it about the breakfast slot that's so tough?
I think it's the hours. I think it's the, you know, bakers often talk about it, that just that inhuman factor of being awake in the dark while everyone else is sleeping. It just means your life is so abnormal. I've done it very briefly. I did it for a Campbelltown radio station in 2010 and enjoyed it immensely. We were actually filming Howzo's at the same time, so I'd do a radio show and then go straight to set. By 8 o'clock at night, you know, I had nothing left. So you never watch TV, you never go out for dinner, you never go and see a film or a play or have a life with your wife. It pays well if you're in a metro station. I think there is just, and it's very old school in that radio stations believe that breakfast, you know, it's back then with that thing when it was a dial and you had to tune it in. I guess like TV shows, that if you have a strong breakfast show, people won't change over. So there's so much pressure to do a good breakfast show that I think, you know, all the resources go to it.
And I think when you've sort of passed in the corridor, sort of when you've been working elsewhere with various kind of breakfast presenters, they actually struggle to stay cheerful over any long period of
time. That's what I implied in the piece, and Rosso since tweeted after I forwarded the article to him. He said, the reason I was such a sourpuss was because of you, old man. So I take that on board, and I've also seen a comment below the article online now from Wendy Harmer. She was one of the people that I suggested, what the hell are they doing now? And she informed me that she's sold over 600,000 copies of her kids' books, had an animated children's series broadcast in 50 countries. She seems to be doing pretty well, so my apologies to Wendy Harmer there for not doing my research.
She's just launched a new magazine or something as well.
Exactly, well, the Hoopla, that's right, yeah.
Yes, that's right, which I haven't spent much time reading, although I don't think I'm actually target audience, because I think it's more aimed at women, that one. Next, Who's Who?
There's more to radio than music through your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan MicroCitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
So as well as Jabba, with us today is Hugh Martin, CEO of Crown Content, who publishes Who's Who in Australia. Welcome to the podcast, Hugh.
Thank you for having me.
So, yeah, first off, for those who don't know about it, tell us about Crown Content.
Well, Crown Content is the publishing company. It publishes Who's Who in Australia, which we are launching today, and also Who's Who in Women Australia and Who's Who in Business. We also publish Margaret G's Media Guide, which has been around for many years, and a couple of other directories for local government, national government. So it's a, you know, it's a data and directory publishing business. Who's Who Australia has been around for 106 years or thereabouts. It started out as a book called Notable Australians, which had lots of people with Sir before their name or Dame before their name. And in the intervening 100-plus years, it's changed quite a lot. So now we have not just the occasional Sir or Dame, but lots of people who are pretty recognisable Australians.
So how do you decide who should be in it?
Well, I don't decide. There's a team, an independent editorial team we have who work to a set of criteria which are pretty strict. And there's a, you know, because of the, I guess, the history and the kind of kudos, if you like, that's attached to being listed as in Who's Who, there are some fairly strict criteria. So we start with some defined positions. So, you know, the Prime Minister, the Governor General, various cabinet ministers and so on are included, judges because of their position. And then you work down through various prominent career-type positions. Where it gets interesting, I guess, is the more subjective decisions around who has been a significant contributor to Australian life during the last 12 years and 12 months, and that's, you know, there's some interesting discussions that happen. So you know, this year we've included Jessica Watson, for example, who who circumnavigated the globe, but that was 12 months or more ago. Partly why she wasn't included last year was that I think she was still on the water and there might have been still some questions about where she was going to make land. But this year she's the youngest entrant that we've had in Who's Who for many years. I think Bindi Irwin was pipped her at the post from an age point of view. We've got Shane Watson, who's currently injured, but we expect will play a bit of a role in the test team in this coming summer.
And a few media types as
A few media types, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got Amanda Wilson, who is at the Herald.
Sydney Morning Herald, yep. Gay Alcorn is the editor of the Sunday Age.
Peter Fitzsimmons, of course.
Ah, Peter. Yeah. Well,
you've been very good to the good folk of Fairfax this year, haven't you?
Well, there's a few News Limited people. There's plenty from Channel 10, surprisingly enough, or not surprisingly enough.
James Warburton, the new CEO.
New CEO of Channel 10. Yep. So there's media, I guess, you know, provides a lot of identifiable and significant contributors to Australian life. So that's a reasonable category to include.
And Jabba, do you know anyone who's in Who's Who?
My mum is in the Who's Who of Australian Women. Louise Rosalind Stewart Davis is her name. I've got her entry here, which I wondered whether she had actually just made up and put your stamp on it there, Hugh, but it turns out I believe it is official. My question, I suppose, is how does someone like my mum, who she's, you know, worked in the corporate sector her entire life, how does she find her way into the pages of Who's Who?
Well, one of the things that we've really looked at closely over recent years is the contribution of women generally. So we go back to that those first few years there weren't that many women, and really through most of the 20th century, and it reflects what Australian society's but high levels in business, government, community service, all those kind of areas. In recent years, women have increasingly contributed immensely, and we probably underdo that a bit. You know, we've got 20-23% of the entrants are women. My feeling is that should be higher. And one of the ways to kind of look at addressing that was launching Who's Who in Women Australia, which we did, must be coming on for 6 to 8 years ago now. And that's something I think that really tries to celebrate the contribution that women make. This year, the foreword to Australian to the Who's Who Australia was written by Suzanne Corey, who's a medical research scientist at the Howard Florey Institute in Melbourne, very highly regarded and well known in her field. And, you know, there are lots of women who make significant contributions. We've only got to look at our leading politicians at the moment. And that was an interesting kind of moment in media when the Queen visited earlier this year, and we were seeing pictures of her being greeted by an Australian female Prime Minister and Australian female Governor. So I think, you know, these things are changing, albeit too slowly for some people, and we, you know, we need to be able to reflect that in the way we select people.
Another woman you've got you've added this year to the Who's Who is Lizzie Gardner, the correct?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
The Oscar-winning costume designer from Priscilla, yes. Queen of the Desert.
Yes, there's someone who's got a you know very significant track record in film. And fashion as well, and you know maybe there's a case to say she should have been included previously. It's a little bit like, in some respect, it's a bit like I don't know. In ARIA terms, it's perhaps the you know the lifetime achievement recognition or a similar type of thing. It tends to be less about just the most recent 12 months, albeit that is a significant contributing factor. But then there are people who, you know, you clearly can see have been working tirelessly and perhaps recognised in some areas and should be acknowledged as being important, you know, behind the scenes contributors in all kinds of areas.
Any notable people, Hugh, that have dropped out of the list this year?
Notable people, do you know what? I can't tell you off the top of my head. The issue is that there are always people that drop off the list. And
so it's not once you're in until you're dead, then you might, if you've not done something interesting, you could fall out.
Yeah, you can. That said, there are inevitably people that do drop off the perch, so to speak, and they do tend to get removed when that happens. But more often it's a matter of retiring from a position, whether you're a judge or a politician or whatever, or just being less active in that, you know, community area or you know, similar types of things. So we don't tend to you know, if there's a professional misdemeanor or someone's sort of convicted of a serious crime, then they will get removed. But there haven't been any examples of that this year.
Is Kyle Sunderland's in there?
I don't think Kyle is, you know. But I'll tell you one debate that we did have was whether or not Julian Assange should be in. And he didn't make it this year. And, you know, that was quite an interesting kind of discussion because on a lot of levels, you know, he's well and truly acknowledged as a significant profile in global terms as an Australian. But the view was taken by the editorial team that he had some, you know, serious charges against him that he needed to have addressed before he could be seen as being someone who would be put in Who's Who.
And then a couple of other people who made it were a couple of film people, which maybe I'll get Colin as our film person to tell us a little bit about Emil Sherman, producer, and Ben Mendelsohn, the actor.
Yeah, so Emil Sherman, who also won an Oscar this year for King's Speech as the producer. He also produced Oranges and Sunshine and owns Fulcrum Media, which is sort of the lending company for the producer Offset. And also Ben Mendelsohn, who, of course, was in Animal Kingdom. He was, what was his character's name? Not Smurf, that was Jackie Weaver.
He was the baddie.
He was the baddie. and he's been in other things like Mullet Head, which was a bit of
great
a
great little film.
Yeah, one. And Idiot Box, some classics there.
Yeah, I loved that.
And Tangled, that series that was on earlier, was it late last year, earlier this year? He's in the first series, he was just spectacular. I think he carried that series really well. Look, what I think is interesting about both those names is Emil Sherman, you know, to win an Oscar is a huge achievement anyway. Not all that many Australians do. In a role as a producer, I don't know how many have done that previously. And so that film was, you know, a great success, had a couple of other Aussies in it, at least one other prominent Aussie in it who's already in the book. Interestingly, their family, I think, you know, they're a big artistic or kind of supporter of the arts generally. So I think there's a combination of things working with a selection like that. And the same with Ben Mendelsohn too. I mean, as we've just said, you know, there are a lot of roles he's had over the years. He's kind of one of the great character actors of his generation of Australian actors, and I think that's kind of a needs to be acknowledged as well.
I would just like to say I think it was mullet, not mullet head.
Yeah. It's hard to separate those two words exactly. Sometimes.
Now, Hugh, Crown is seen very much as a print publisher, but your background is in digital. So what are your plans for Crown going forward?
Well, that's a good question, Robert. My background is in digital, and I've previously been at Fairfax and News Digital Media, and more recently at APN Online, doing digital stuff. Crown has a suite of books that we publish. We also have some websites. Crowncontent.com.au will give you a sort of doorway into Who's Who Australia and the other guys. But what we need to do is become more of a publisher of data and listings. So it's not a very sexy sounding term, but there's lots and lots of great information that we have buried away in our databases that we publish in printed form at the moment that I think has great value in the digital sphere, whether that's searchable through websites or delivered via mobile phones or iPads. And I think increasingly that's where the future is for all publishers. We've only got to look at the debates that are going on within News Limited and Fairfax, as two examples about how you really kind of complete that digital transition. And as a small to mid-sized publisher, Crown is and a privately owned business too, which I think is also a strength in this kind of context. We've got to do similar things. I think one of the other advantages we have is that as a subscription-based business, we're not trying to kind of claw back the value that has been given away through a digital strategy, which is obviously a significant problem that the sort of general mass media publishers are facing.
Well, you were at APN and you blogged about it recently. I think the APN has been making some big changes, closing some papers up on the Gold Coast, turning what had been long-term dailies into weeklies or bi-weeklies. How much of that do you think was just an inevitable fact of what's happening with newspapers, and how much was because there wasn't a full plan for APN?
Well, look, I mean, I can't speak for what the the current strategy is in a company like that, but in my experience, you've got to have a fairly cohesive view of how you're going to transition. Without kind of putting too much in the way of value judgments on it, I think what Fairfax and News have done is to think about this in a serious way, is to acknowledge that audiences are moving online and to try and figure out how to support that from a business transition point of view with the yields and the kind of value you've got in a print business and transfer that to digital.
Which by
it's
omission,
very hard.
By omission, that implies that APN weren't doing that.
Well, look, I mean, maybe the question speaks for itself. I think there is a big difference between the metro and the regional markets. There is also a big difference between the competitive environment that APN has in their regional markets and the competitive environment that both News and Fairfax have in the metro markets in Sydney and Melbourne, and to a certain extent Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth. The regional markets tend to be little monopolies. Coffs Harbour is actually an exception because there are two competing papers in that market. But within a regional monopoly, it's kind of easy to get a bit lazy and a bit, start to assume that, you're the only place that people are going to shop, so they're going to keep shopping with you, whether or not you're in print or in digital.
And I see that you've got a newspaper habit. You've walked in with the AFR under your arm today. Jabba, when did you last buy a paper? Are you still in the habit?
We subscribe to the Herald. I just read that this morning before coming in. Look, I'm a big fan of all types of media. I would much rather pay a subscription fee to look at the Herald Online with a lot less clutter on the screen. I find the intrusion, I appreciate that you need to monetize, otherwise I don't have a job in media. That's we're all here to sell soap. That's why content exists, as far as I'm concerned.
It's an advertising manager once told me that content is the grout between the tiles of advertising. And as someone from editorial background, I was absolutely horrified. But sure enough, you're looking at me and you're like, what the hell are you talking about?
No, not at all. that's my experience. Working in media for 15 years or so is that at the end of the day, and at the moment, I'm faced with the challenge of okay, what do I do next? The main thing when I take projects to people is, well, if we could have it paid for by someone, if it was whatever the phrase is, sponsored content or that kind of thing. And just watch, I just saw an ad for It's a Knockout, and there seems it's like it's filmed in a McDonald's.
Yes, that's the thing. McDonald's put so much money up front that you know, they've made a significant investment in making it happen.
And I think when you don't define a difference between the grout and the tiles, then it's a shitty mess.
That's right.
That's why I think a lot of the SMH online stuff is really irritating, because instead of a delineation of, you know, YouTube do it well, they have pre-roll. You know, for 10 seconds you sit there, the video comes. And
10 seconds, unlike 40, 30 to 45 seconds on some of the.
And some of them are really unfortunate. There'll be a story about a fatal car accident, there'll be an ad for a new Volvo. You know, I think that kind of stuff is lazy.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, just to talk about design for a minute. I was thinking about this the other day. You know, those big news sites have more or less had the same design that they've had for 10 years. I remember we built some of those back in 2002, 2003. We were debating what size the image should be, the lead image, and it's still the same. And we've perhaps changed from left to right side of the page, and everything else flows from that. It's really when you look at the comparison with perhaps television and radio, when TV was introduced in Australia in the 50s, for how many years was it? People were reading the news, evening news, in a dinner suit, and it was effectively radio with pictures. And when radio came in, it was effectively newspapers with speech. So right now we're still in this situation from a design point of view, where online and in a news terms is still kind of newspapers, television with pixels or something like that. Anyway, what I mean is we haven't really reached a kind of a maturity in terms of what are the right structures from a design point of view and a usability point of view. There's lots of good thinking, but I think it's got a long way to go.
Yeah, we're in that transition, absolutely. I think with SMH as an example, the number of times I click don't play, because I don't go to their website for videos.
Yeah,
I go there to read a print article.
And going back to a wider point that you were making just now, Jabba, this thing that I guess you were maybe this will happen more and more, but you effectively are sort of a content maker, creative gun for hire. Do you think that as this changes and you talk about having to, you know, come with someone to pay for it attached, are you going to have to create whole projects if you're going to do the things that you want and go out and find the means of funding them as well, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people face that challenge at the moment. If I look at the work that I've done this year, I've done stuff for Howzo's and for SBS and Max for Foxtel. The other projects I've been involved in are all sponsored. The Optus gig for Aria. I've done different gigs for BlackBerry. You know, these, and over the years, I've done a lot of stuff for Jack Daniels. I've done a lot of stuff for brands. And they are the people, branded content is the expression I was looking for before. You know, they are the people that are keeping so much of the industry alive, because there is less and less being spent on independent productions, you know, quality things like The Slap. There's not too many of those.
And what's next year holding for you? How's it looking?
At the moment, I'm looking to further my writing, you know. So, you know, a big thanks to yourself and your team for giving me a bit of an entree into that. I was writing for Rolling Stone. I'm trying to move away from music because the music industry is shrinking. I'm in talks with Seamus from CBS Interactive about doing some stuff for them. So just looking at, I'm in a bit of a transition myself, and I feel kind of a lot of people are. There's a lot of stuff changing, you know, throughout all media, and just, I suppose, at the age a lot of us are at, I'm just about to hit 40. I'm like, what do I do with the rest of my life? So maybe permaculture.
Next, Goldfish Gate.
So earlier this week, we posted an anonymous opinion piece about the stupid promo gifts that media agencies receive, which apexed when a company promoting South Australia sent live goldfish as a gift. Well, live when they sent them, anyway. The bowl read, "Be the big fish in a small pond and come test the water." Unfortunately, it looks like the water killed them. 55 were sent out, not all of them made it, and Advantage SA has since apologised. Robin, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, and no, I thought, obviously I'm an animal lover, and I was just utterly horrified when I heard about this. I mean, you know, whatever next, you know, puppies and kittens through the post sort of thing. I thought it was dreadful. But it's a difficult balance to strike when you're sending a gift. You don't want it to just be boring, so you don't want to just send yet another USB stick or a mug or a mouse pad. You want to stand out. But yeah, no, obviously this fell totally flat. But, you know, you can get gifts right. I mean, yesterday, Peter McDonald from the agency Register visited our office and absolutely, you know, proudly fluttering his Mumbrella umbrella, so which he loves and he finds really useful. And stuff. You know, he actually, you know, adds to his life. You know, it's
I'm
useful.
Glad he didn't get one of the ones where the handle fell off.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes gifts can work. They just the trick is, I guess, that they're useful.
Now, Jabba, I guess in your radio days, you probably were bombarded with the gifts from publicists and stuff. What was the kind of more kind of outstanding stuff or terrible stuff?
I guess in our experience, it was a lot of edible stuff. I think that always goes down well, and it's that notion of supply of understanding that the radio station is a lot more than just the one or two people on air. So it's not sending a cupcake, but sending 100 cupcakes. But then again, doing it in a way that's not wasteful, so that there's 90 cupcakes being thrown out at the end of the day. So I think anything, you know, Robin's take on being an animal lover and anything that's potentially perishable, whether that's a living creature or foodstuffs, you know. The best thing we ever got, I think, was a fridge full of different beverages, and that arrived several
including
times.
Including the fridge?
Including the fridge, yeah. And that's nice. Smart, you know, because you keep the fridge even when the drinks run out.
Well, VB did a great had a great lift with that earlier this week too. But, you know, the thing about that, we're talking about this this goldfish story, you know, the tricky thing about gifts is actually getting the noticeability and the kind of take-up from it. So, you know, those poor goldfish, they did sacrifice themselves, but it may have been,
it
in terms of the
story,
PA,
you're
created,
right, yeah,
to, you know, some kind of greater good.
See, I don't know what the story's about, though. All I know is some goldfish died.
Yeah, well, true, but nevertheless, we're talking about it, and somewhere, you know, there'll be a PR person going, well, okay, we won't do it again, but gee, that kind of did what it meant to do.
At least got the attention. And I noticed the CEO, as she's been doing the rounds apologising, has been sort of emphasising, and we just wanted everyone to know what a wonderful place South Australia is.
Just
to
don't
work,
drink the water.
So, and going back, Jabba, you mentioned the cupcakes arriving at the radio station. I had lunch with someone from a radio network this week who was telling me there's a phrase that's used, which is listener cake, and apparently you should never eat the listener cake. Were you aware of this rule?
My understanding is never eat sausages off the listener barbecue. Whenever a station has a sausage sizzle down at the local car wash, don't eat the sausages.
Next, will Australia follow Europe into a recession this time?
So with an unstable Europe, those in the media and marketing business in Australia are still trying to work out what this means for Australia. So Hugh, you run a big company. Are you budgeting for any growth in 2012?
Well, look, we are, yes. And there's a couple of things that you know, perhaps put us in a little slightly different basket. One is that we don't rely on the advertising market in the same way that that most other publishers do. So we're not kind of looking at marketing budgets that people have as being potentially our income shrinking. And we have some significant digital development plans, which will give us a little bit of a lift in new business terms. But I think that this is a pretty serious point in terms of the economy. You read everything on a day-to-day basis, and you know, even when you're kind of trying your best to understand it, it's still confusing. And I think that Australia's seems to be in a reasonably good position.
Yeah, yes. Jabba, what do you reckon? What's the temperature feel like as far as consumers feel? Well,
it's
I feel like I'm interviewing Dazza. Actually, you're the common man, Dazza. What do you think?
It's interesting that, you know, just watching the news last night and the talk with people, I think Hugh's, you know, made a brilliant point there, just in terms of the more money you keep for shareholders and for the big guys, the less money there is for the little guys. And it's the little guys that effectively buy the stuff from the big guys. So if you don't balance that equation right, no one's going to buy anything. I know Westfield recently launched an online shopping thing so you can buy stuff. You know, that is a bold initiative to go, we're in the business of selling retail, but we'll sell stuff online. That's acknowledging the challenges that lay ahead for them, just like you guys looking at whether you put the who's who online, how do you monetize that rather than selling a book? It's like when the white pages went online. So I think there needs to be a much more fluid environment so that the money does get sloshed around back and forth rather than being, you know, I guess the cautious climate makes the big organisations hang on to their bucks, which fucks the rest of us.
Well, you know, sorry, but I think economy like Australia's, digitally is actually really critical. We've been listening to arguments about innovation and productivity problems for quite a while now, and digital is a way to get that. So, you know, Westfield selling online, David Jones selling online, Woolworths, Coles, everybody needs to sell online, because if you don't, then some people are going to buy it offshore anyway from some other website. I had this great quote once, which said that if you are born, when you're born, if a technology exists, you take it for granted and you live with it, you know, your kids, exactly that kind of thing. If it's invented before you're 30 years old, you see it as a huge opportunity. It's a great career potential, possibly a way of making yourself quite rich. If it's invented after you're 30 years old, you probably see it as a threat and perhaps something that's even kind of going to contribute to the end of the world.
Wow.
And the problem is that the internet has now, 15 years old? A lot of the people running major corporations in this country were older than 30. They were quite considerably older than 30 when it was invented, and they still don't know how to properly engage with digital innovation and the productivity that you can get out of digital innovation. But you look at companies that are run by people who are younger, who saw, you know, who kind of grew up with the web and digital products of all sorts. They're making big inroads. Silicon Valley investors are over in Australia in the next few months looking at the Australian startup companies that are in the digital space as being the next wave of great innovators in digital terms. Why aren't Australian investors investing in that? And why aren't Australian companies that have got room on their balance sheets actually taking on board these fantastic new companies that are being run by younger entrepreneurs and managers and helping build productivity into the economy? I think that's where there's a big problem.
And Robin, on the economy, what's the kind of mood from media agencies?
I had a chat with John Steadman, who's boss of GroupM, which I think is Australia's media buyer, and he said that...
Yeah, we'll be the biggest, actually.
Yes, yeah. He's really worried. He said that this time is the first time, unlike 2008... if Europe goes down, Australia will go down with it. That was his sense. Obviously, that have a big impact on spending. But also, a brighter side, I had a chat also with Peter McDonald, I mentioned earlier. He said that there's been an uplift in the number of accounts changing hands between agencies. So there is, it's not all doom and gloom. There's still, while the value of the market is suffering, there's still a lot of activity. The market's still buzzing.
Next, BM's Bright Young Things.
Thinking of working at an ad agency? Looking for the best creatives to develop your next ad campaign? Look no further than the Mumbrella Creative Agency Review. 148 pages of hardcore industry intelligence to help you make your next big agency decision. Visit book.focalattractions.com.au/MCAR.
This week, at PR firm Bursa Marstella announced the launch of a youth division that, quote unquote, gets digital. So the Sparks, as they're called, are a team of bright young things who have been involved in new business, client sessions and working on creative projects. I had a chat with the head of digital at BM, and she was describing her team, which is a bunch of people in their early 20s. The idea being that these people, these youths...
I love the way you put put quote marks around youths.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, sorry about that. It's just the idea.
Early mid-20s is really not really youth anymore.
Well, not
is it?
Really, but it's. I guess
younger
than
us.
I get one of the reasons we wrote about this story is that it comes on the tail end of a big debate about ageism in media and marketing. We've had Tony Sims, the chap who's protesting about the fact that he can't get a job, that he's too old. We've also had a chap called Ben Lilly, who's the CEO of McCann Erickson, coming out and said that we want to hire young people who get digital. So this story sort of feeds into that. And a quote from the head of digital at BMM, she was saying that, these people, they attack problems without an expectation of what they can and can't do. So, she's making a virtue of the fact that they don't have experience, that they're young people, they're fresh, they're
fearless.
New. Yes, they're fearless attackers of problems. That was the story.
I don't know why. The thought that came into my mind was just suddenly a bunch of people running around and bouncing off walls.
Yeah.
But in a fearless way.
With goldfish bowls in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Obviously, the response in the comment thread has been pretty, negative. Let's see.
Is this the youth fail?
Yes.
One point that they started a Tumblr, is that correct? And I had a look on the Tumblr, and some of the they were kind of posting bits of inspiration, and I don't want to be mean, but it felt like a bit of a high school project.
Indeed, some of the projects they've been given to do are sort of run around with iPhones and video stuff, and sort of come up with their own sort of versions of what creativity is and what it means, and apparently that's going to help the industry and their clients.
I guess the question, though, is if you're the client, do you want to be paying to educate people? Or do you want to hire some experienced people who already know this stuff?
Depends what the experience gets you. My big concern about life in general is that no one risks anymore. We are such a risk-averse society through insurance, through government, through a big brother nanny state, that something like this, where kids are running around with iPhones filming something, there's a risk in that. You never know what's going to come out of that, and it's the things like Blair Witch Project that turned movie making on its head. It's those things where people take a risk and create something completely out of the box that they're the things that completely change the rest of our lives. They're not the staid old things. Starting World War One, there's a risk. You know, look.
Well, that's a big risk, but this is the creative process. Maybe punk music instead of World War One. You know, punk music threw a lot of stuff against a wall, but some great stuff came out of it.
Disco.
You know? Well, did that come out of punk? Maybe it was an anti-punk. Punk was an anti-disco thing, or other way around. Yeah, it was punk was an anti-disco thing.
I think punk was anti-classic rock, right, you know, that real prog rock kind of thing. But it is that notion of out of one thing comes another, and unless you take a risk and do something completely against the grain, we're all just stuck in the grain and it doesn't work. And that kind of touches on your theory, or, you know, your position, that we are in a phase at the moment of trying to work out what we take with us from the past in terms of print media coming into a digital space and all that kind of stuff. Someone needs to take a risk. You know, Mumbrella itself is a risk. You know, the guys here at CBS take a risk.
But the point, I think, and it's a good one, is that that risk is building on something that's already quite solid. So Mumbrella is a new product, but what you guys do well is news, and in this sphere, and that's, yeah, didn't invent it, but gee, it still works really well. It's taking it into a new space. So do these guys in CBS Interactive, and that's what I think that you know, a lot of the bigger companies that are still struggling with these transformation type of questions have to kind of remind themselves, is we don't have to throw everything out, but what's at our core business? What are we really good at, and how do we take that into the new, you know, the new era, if you like?
Next, did you Google Strongbow? On Wednesday, Google Australia announced their most searched ads in their brand Zeitgeist survey. The Strongboat Summer Blossoms ad was number one. Google said the term was popular because of the music, a song by The Naked and Famous called Young Blood. Recognise this?
We're only young and naive still. We require certain skills. The mood changes like the wind. Hard to control when it begins.
The second most searched ad was Bonds, which featured a lot of actress Rachel Taylor in her underwear. The third most searched was Telstra's Today is Amazing. Colin, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, what I recognise when I look back at these top three is they all, music-based, they were all quite, especially The Naked and Famous, followed the band MGMT. They all sort of had this, it was very hip music behind it. And it reminded me of the Tom Donald post on our site a couple of weeks back about stoner ads and the way we like a lot of ads that are, that might be good under the influence of different substances. The new Telstra one is very psychedelic.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And so, you know, maybe people are sitting at home on a Friday afternoon just sort of Googling different ads. I don't know.
Yeah, and I did wonder what was the motivation, why people would, I mean, people spend most of their lives trying to avoid ads, presumably, or just skipping through them. Why would people actually actively search for ads, and why?
Well, one of the points, when you go onto, this was Google talking, but yeah, assumedly they find the YouTube video first. And the first question on the Strongbow ad is, what is that song? Mm. And the second is someone responding saying, it's Naked and Famous.
Yes.
So a lot of people, I guess, trying to find out what those songs were.
Yes.
Similarly, I wondered myself what the Telstra one was, whether that was something produced just for Telstra or whether that was an artist that they, you know, bought the rights to.
And what was the answer to that?
Oh, I didn't get very far with my search.
great ads.
That's investigative.
You got distracted by velvet cupcakes.
Great ads are hugely entertaining and really informative, and they're only 30 to 45 seconds. So if you're looking for something just to flick onto your friends for a bit of entertainment that's not going to take them too long to get through and give them a laugh, and a good ad is often one of those things.
Yeah, but have you guys ever actively sought out an ad by searching for it?
Yeah, Kenny Powers, K-Swiss. I don't know the name of who that guy actually is. I know he's a comedic actor and he did a thing where he was the pretend CEO of a sportswear company, and it's fantastic, and it's something, I think it's a three-minute piece of whether that's actually an ad or branded content.
And IKEA had a range of band ads a few years back that were hysterical, and I know I switched out a lot of them just to, for a laugh.
Yeah. Well, I noticed just in sort of my own searches that the Bonds ad, the new Christmas Bonds ad, has had over 100,000 views. I was disappointed to see that the Sydney Opera House, the Shipsong project, while it's had around, I think, 30,000 views on YouTube, it didn't make it into Google's brand zeitgeist.
Yeah, no, interesting, because, I mean, that's...
I wonder if they recognised it as a brand...
Yes, yeah. And it's interesting that, something that regards that the industry regards as the best out of the year, Shipsong project, didn't make it. So Hugh, thoughts on your favourite ads of 2011?
Of 2011? Oh, well, the I'm on a horse, I'm on a ship ad is pretty amusing, I've got to say. So what was that? It was Old Spice, wasn't it? There you go. Yes. So I even remember what the product was.
Just briefly, Google's top search brands were Commonwealth Bank, the AFL, and ANZ. So Jabba, your favourite ads this year?
I knew I should have thought of something. I don't really like ads because everything goes through my Foxtel IQ box. Right.
Zap through it.
Yeah, I'm just a master of the, which is weird because, as I mentioned before, my income is derived almost in exclusively from creating content that, is built around soap powder ads. So I can't think of a single ad.
The funny thing with the Foxtel thing is what I think maybe gets more power, though, is the sponsors, because you start navigating by the sponsor at the beginning of the break and the end of the break. So you start looking out
exactly
for
right. Sorbent, that thing. So. The handy tales like MasterChef, big fan of that show. And as soon as you see one of the judges in a letterboxed kind of thing, bang, you hit play again.
Next, and now for some shit.
There's more to radio than music for your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan MicroCitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at cradiodifferently.com.
If you're only half listening, the following could easily be a real bulletin.
Now, in a desperate attempt to fill 24 hours of programming, here's some bullshit that happened somewhere today. We've got some footage here of the bullshit, which began just after 3 o'clock this afternoon, when residents in this neighborhood were shocked to see this fairly common thing happening. An attractive witness described the event in breathless terms.
I went to my window and I was like, whoa, there's some bullshit happening.
That happened right over there. I'm an older man, so you can trust what I say.
Authorities in special uniforms rushed to the scene to stand around while our cameras filmed them. Our reporter Keith Collins joins us now live from the scene of the bullshit through the use of expensive technology. Good to be with you again, Keith. We have a colorful graphic here that shows instances of bullshit like this are on the rise. Is that right?
Yes, although why is unclear. Some say it's because of one fucking reason. Others say it's because of some other fucking reason. I talked to this random expert on the subject who told me this thing you're about to hear him say right after he points at a piece of paper.
I spent my entire life attending the nation's most prestigious schools to talk about bullshit like this. I'm really just happy to be on TV.
Now let's see if we can drag this out a little longer by showing emails written by some of our viewers. I once saw some stuff kind of like the shit you're talking about happen. I have nothing more to add. Another person says, I am angry that things like this happen. I get mad about every bullshit thing I see. So obviously a lot of opinions there to make this story seem somewhat meaningful.
Oh, absolutely, Glenn. This bullshit has some broader implications. Here's a list of tips on how to avoid bullshit happening to you.
And here's some footage of Congress.
Yes, I see that.
Well, thank you, Keith. Let us know if there are any updates on this bullshit story from there.
There's no way there will be.
Very good. We'll check back with you in an hour anyway.
I'm just some fucking guy.
When we return, we'll look at live footage of a car chase taken from a helicopter and free associate about what's going on.
Of course, what you were hearing was a sketch from the Onion News Network, which, although it's been around for a few months, went crazy on Facebook this week. Suddenly everybody I know was sharing it. It's kind of a bit of a dead-on nod, particularly when it comes to the visuals, to some news reporting, particularly, I guess, when it comes to current affairs programmes. maybe before we go for the bad, Hugh, which news outlets do you respect when it comes to television news?
To television, oh well, I I watch ABC News 24. Actually, quite like News 24. I do watch Channel 10 News. My kids love the project, so I tend to watch. We have a debate at 7 o'clock whether we're watching that or the ABC, and I always lose. So those kind of news outlets I like.
And Jabba, goods and bads?
I tend to watch them all if I'm home. We record the ABC News and generally take that as the gospel news, which is bizarre, your viewing habits. I guess that was formed as a child, really. Same with the Herald. But what I've noticed about the 9 and 7 News in particular is that every single story now, and that grab in there about we're going to use some expensive technology now, is to combat the instantness of the internet, is that they have live crosses everywhere just to make it look like the news that's still probably 3 hours old is absolutely current.
That is all we have time for today. Thank you very much to Jabba.
Can you hear my kids outside the door? Sorry about that.
It all adds to the flavour. Thank you also to Hugh.
Thank you, guys.
And to Robin.
Cheers, Tim.
And to Colin.
Thank you.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded in the studios of CBS Interactive. See you next week. Toodle-pip.
See you on The Voice.